The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is February 1st, 2024, day before Groundhog Day.
Woo! Oh, must be Groundhog Day here. It's not really a thing here, but it must be Groundhog Day.
Do you have groundhogs?
No, we do not have groundhogs.
How are you going to know about winter coming or leaving, whatever?
I don't know. I feel like we have other things, like, I'm just making this up, like, where they, like, get an octopus or something.
What?
I don't know. I just made that up. But I feel like we do have something similar, but not a groundhog. I don't know. I'll have to look into it and report back next time.
Something at a swimming carnival or whatever. So will he see his shadow tomorrow? I don't know. Does it ever make a difference? No. Just a dumb, silly thing. And there's multiple groundhogs that do this, so... Which one is right? I think the main one is Punxsutawney Phil.
Punk, what a name.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's going to be like, you said that wrong or something. I don't know. I don't know the lore of Groundhog Day. So let's just move past this now that I brought it up. But that's the date. Weather, it's cold here. It's hot in Australia, as always.
Still under another heat advisory. Like, it actually seemed kind of cool this morning and I was getting dressed and I said to my daughter, what's the weather? And she's like, Mom, it's a heat advisory. I was like, oh, great.
Again.
Yeah. I am, like, I never ever thought I'd say this because I really do love summer, but I am a little bit ready now for it to be a little bit cooler. Remind me of this in a few months where I'm like, it's so cold.
Yeah, it's like the best times are in between, I guess, technically the fall and spring or like early summer. Early winter, but when it's winter or like summer, when it's very, very hot or very, very cold, it's tough. Mm. We debate in my family sometimes because my sister's husband is one of those people, he does not get cold. He will go out in shorts. He played hockey forever, so I don't know if that helps, but he doesn't get cold. He'll have their thermostat, like preferably on 58 probably. He does the dishes with cold water, never gets cold. And he gets hot so fast. But we always debate because of that. Like, would you rather be cold or would you rather be hot?
I don't know. My initial thought was cold because then at least you can warm up. Whereas I feel like it's harder to cool down. But I don't know. I know lately here when it's been so hot at night, it's so hard to sleep. So
that's the worst.
Yeah.
I know. I change my mind all the time because initially I would be – I would say cold too because I'd be like, oh, it's nice to like wrap up with like blankies and you get snuggly. But then when I was outside like 2 weeks ago, it was super, super cold here. And it was so cold, it was like painful. Or there was a time where I was in Salem, Massachusetts at the wind chill, it was like negative 12 or something. And it just hurts immediately. And when I'm in a situation like that, I'm like, okay, I'd rather be hot. But being really, really hot sucks too. You're sweaty. You feel like you're gonna pass out.
Yeah, and just so, like, there's nothing worse. I feel like hot is all right as long as it's not too humid. With the humidity, it's, like, soupy and just you always feel...
wet, damp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not fun. I don't really have any major house or moving updates. We've been painting. We got the floors refinished, so that was exciting. I haven't seen them in person done yet, but I saw pictures and... It's crazy how much better the floors look because they were pretty dirty for one. Like, we hadn't cleaned them. And the guy who came to look at the floors was – there's some dark spots that we just – like, we knew it was some sort of water damage, but he thought it was actually, like, pee from the people's dog. So he wasn't sure if that would come out or if it would – because it goes through all the way and damages the wood all the way through. But in the pictures, any of the spots, like, I didn't see them anymore, and it seems like they all came out. So, looks like some brand new floors, so that's exciting.
Yeah, it looks amazing, the photos you sent.
Yeah, I got off some years of filth, so.
Fresh start.
Yeah, and there's so much paint on the walls because it was the wood paneling, so you had to use, like, a shellac primer. So, I feel like it's almost like new walls because that sealed in any oldness into the walls.
Fresh and new.
Yeah. So next, you got to renovate the kitchen and all that and be out by the end of the month, still work full time, still have a podcast, still have to give Peep attention every second of the day. I'll be going insane for sure, but the last stretch, hopefully. And then I could get back to a nice, boring routine life where I go grocery shopping and actually cook food, because I've just been living on – I've actually been using CookUnity a lot, one of our sponsors. Really great. That's not – me saying that isn't sponsored, but I do like them. But it's been a big help because my apartment is such a mess right now. Obviously, I don't have a kitchen at the other house right now. So it's just like living off microwavable foods or things that you can heat up easily. So, I mean, I have lost some weight, which is positive.
One benefit.
Anyways, we were talking last week about Olivia's car, and we were joking, we're like, nobody cares, but actually a lot of people seem to care.
It's amazing actually how many messages we've had just from people who are like, this same thing happened to me, what kind of car was it, blah blah blah. So update, I think this is the third update I've given, so that means this has now been going on for 3 weeks, which is longer than I actually had the brand new car for. So still ongoing. I think the last update that I spoke about last week was, I think maybe I told you guys that they had apparently identified the problem and they were just waiting for the head office to release the car. That was maybe Wednesday or Thursday last week. So then Monday this week, I got another call saying that they now have to order a part from Asia. It will be a minimum of 6 weeks and they're not sure if that is going to fix the problem. And by that point, I was angry. I said, no, I've had enough. This is not acceptable. I had actually spoken with a lawyer who I know. She has said that that is classed as a major defect in Australia that is covered under consumer law. So I said, look, I'm not putting up with this anymore. We have paid for this car that we haven't use. We haven't had the car. I said, I will not be accepting the repaired vehicle, especially based on the fact that you don't know if it's going to fix the issue, which could have been a fatal issue. Anyway, so I wrote them a very legal email.
You've been so brave.
Sent that to them. And I think they got a shock. Like, I think they just thought I was just going to accept the car. And I'm like, no, I'm not having the car back. Like, you know, fair enough, it was like a radio defect or an air conditioning issue or something. This is an issue with the accelerator of the car, apparently. So I said no. So that's been in the process. I was saying to Stephanie, so the lawyer said to give them 48 hours to respond. To be fair, they have responded within 48 hours, but their response was, we're working on it.
Essentially.
But I was saying to Stephanie, they told me they were going to ring today. So I put my phone on Do Not Disturb because I knew that if they rang while we were recording and I'd see it pop up, I'd be like real flustered. So they did call while we were recording, but essentially the update was that they have sent it to the head office and we will likely hear more next week. I don't know. Anyway, it's just like one of those things that now it's dragging on and on and on, and I'm dreading dealing with them and dreading the interactions. Like, the people that I've been dealing with are fine and polite, but I'm also like, I shouldn't have to fight to have a safe vehicle.
Do they not like have a new car that's that they can just give you?
And so that's the thing here too. So because it's a 2024 model, and I, like, anyone who is listening from Australia knows that we are the arse end of the world. Everything takes so long to get here. So when we actually picked up the car, it was the first of, and apparently there was some remake of the car between the 2023 and 2024, so it's quite different. Apparently when we picked up the car, the dealership had never even seen one. They were taking photos of it. The guy's like, do you mind if I have a look? I'm like, no, that's fine. They don't even have a demo model of this car to drive. I hadn't driven the car. They just upgraded us to it because it took so long for the 2023 model to arrive that we got the 2024. It was the first one they've seen. So there's none that they could just swap it. Like, I'm assuming if we do get another one, a replacement, it will be like months. I'm hoping not quite. We waited 6 months for this one. I'm hoping not quite as long. Because surely they should start rolling them out quicker, maybe. I don't know. But, it's not just a matter of me going to the dealership tomorrow to pick up a new one. I feel like it's going to be more of a process for that. I really liked the car as well. Like, the car was beautiful and amazing before this happened. So I just feel like surely it can't happen again. Because everyone's like, would you want a refund or a replacement? And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I'll just go for the replacement surely and it won't happen again. Maybe more for me. I don't know. But
it's crazy that they just literally don't have another car that they could just swap them with that will take a shorter time than the 4 weeks for the part that might not even work.
Yeah. And like, I was reading more about it last night because I was in preparation of this call, and there's like one thing I found. I'll just read it quickly. It says, sorry, I'm just going back to it. It says, if a vehicle cannot be repaired within a reasonable time or at all, Australian consumers have the right under the Australian Consumer Law to a refund or a replacement. So I was like, I wonder what they're going to constitute as a reasonable time frame. But when I spoke to my lawyer friend again, she's like, the car has been off the road for longer than you had the car. That is absolutely not a reasonable time frame. And if it's going to be another 6 weeks, that will be almost three times as long as we had the car. So she said there is no way they could argue that's a reasonable time frame for a repair. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, it's funny how, because I noticed this with my mortgage process as well, how companies are always shocked when you actually stand up for yourself. Because like, I'm one of those people where I really don't want to. I've mentioned many times I have anxiety. So even just getting up the courage to stand up for yourself when you're like clearly being taken advantage of, it's hard to do. So I understand why a lot of people kind of just go with the flow.
Yeah.
But people really do get shocked when you defend yourself. You're like, wait, like, this isn't fair.
When he called me the other day, which was in the 48-hour timeline for which I'd requested a reply, so that was fine. He called me back and he's like, I just wanted to touch base and let you know that we'll be in touch when we have a more concrete timeline about the repair of your car. And I said, well, has the timeline changed from the 6 to 8 weeks? And he said, no, it hasn't. And I said, and I still laugh a little bit. Well, I said, as per my email, I will not be accepting that car back. This is why I listed all the, like, the legal, you know, statutory requirements that they have. And he got a shock. He's like, oh. Okay, like,
he's,
I feel like,
damn, this bitch did her homework.
He was just calling to pluck at me and be like, yeah, we're dealing with it, it'll be fine, well, I'll be in touch. And I'm like, no, that's not happening. Like, I want this, a resolution for this case. I'm happy to wait for a new car if that is what the outcome is, but I'm also not going to be waiting 8 weeks to maybe get a repaired car. Like, anyway.
Yeah, like, so I'd rather wait for the new car than wait for the part for the car.
And I was so, like, after I got off the phone, I was shaking, but I was so proud of myself because I was very articulate and I said everything. Like, you know, sometimes you're like, I wish I had said this, I wish I had said this. Mm-hmm. I somehow managed to get out everything I wanted to say to this guy, and he was very nice. Like, don't get me wrong, he wasn't mean or anything, but he did get a shock when I stood up for myself. And he's like, oh, okay, well, I'll put together all the necessary information for head office and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I feel like that couldn't have gone any better on my end. So anyway, we'll just wait and see what happens. But yeah, a long, stressful process.
Well, good job. You're doing great.
I can't believe how many people have messaged me like this, like, not, and not, to be fair, I haven't actually heard of anyone with the same car as mine. They're all different brands and models, but it seems to happen across the board. So regularly, and I can't believe it. It's such a horrible thing to spend so much money on a car and then to have it be a lemon. It's stressful and horrendous, and I don't wish it on anyone.
Yeah, definitely. It sucks.
So stay tuned. Maybe I should just make a podcast about the car.
Yeah. About anyway, cars.
Hopefully, surely, I don't know. I don't want to say surely by next week we'll have a resolution, but maybe it's getting closer to it. Before we get into the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Cerebral. Are you just coming out of a New Year's haze? I really feel like I am. I feel like the period for me over Christmas and New Year, it's summer holidays here. I know it's different for everyone, but just a weird time. Like, it doesn't feel like real life. You know, sometimes you're off work for a little while. It just seems like a weird, unbelievable time. And I feel like I'm finally coming out of the haze and I'm really, really ready to get back into my routine, focus on my health, my mental health. I'm really looking forward to it. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support, 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space.
I've spoken before about how I have gone to therapy and been on medication for my anxiety. It's always been a huge help to me. It taught me a lot of ways to cope with my anxiety so it doesn't get as bad, or signs I can look for when I feel like it's getting bad again, and how to deal with that so I'm able to manage it on my own and not really let it derail my life as much.
And with Cerebral, there's no more worrying about finding the right provider or scheduling appointments. Cerebral brings it all to you wherever and whenever you need it. So to get started on your path towards better mental health, Cerebral is giving our listeners 15% off their first month of online therapy, medication, or both. Get started at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code TCS to make 2024 your best year yet. That's Cerebral, Cerebral.com/podcast and use code TCS. The offer is only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. See the site for details.
I meant to talk about this last episode. Someone messaged and it was asking about it. If you guys have listened to the podcast for a bit, you'll remember me sometime last year talking about how this girl, who was like the popular girl I went to high school with, got arrested because she was like a teacher. Well, she was a lunch lady at a school and was having a relationship with like a 15-year-old boy. And she's my age, so she'd be at least 32. And she got arrested and all that. And someone messaged asking if there was any updates. And for a long time, there wasn't. But a couple weeks ago, it came out that she was offered a plea deal for 8 years if she pled guilty. And she turned it down. So now it's going to trial, which is crazy. Like, I can't believe she turned down the plea deal.
Yeah, I know. Ballsy.
There's literally videos, texts, pictures. I don't know if she's trying to argue that she didn't actually hook up with the kid because she did pick him up from a party and they were in the car. So I guess no one really exactly knows what happened in the car. So I don't know if that's what she's specifically going to try to fight. But there's a lot of digital evidence against her, it seems. So I don't know what their plan is, but I hope that I will be able to hear more about the trial. Her husband, well, ex-husband, threw a big divorced party. Like, he put a big sign outside of his house with balloons that said finally divorced. Pretty funny. So,
good for him.
Yeah. I think it was like on New Year's Eve. So it was like a New Year's Eve divorced party. So that was funny. That's really all I have for now. So it's like, I don't know how much is going to come out because the other side involves a minor. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes they keep that stuff more under lock, but we'll see. Another quick update that we wanted to talk about. Jennifer Crumbly, who is Ethan Crumbly's mom, her trial started. Ethan Crumbly was the one he killed 4 of his classmates at a high school in Michigan in November 2021. We did an episode on him. If you remember, it kind of seemed like he was crying out for help. He was like doing crazy drawings. In the morning of the shooting, he was brought to the principal's room because he was acting weird and he was drawing pictures of guns with blood and writing like, please help me. And things like that. And his parents came in and school's like, you need to get him counseling in 48 hours. Like, there's something wrong. He's not doing okay. And they were like, maybe you should take him home for the day. And they're like, no, we can't. We're working. So, and then he went to the bathroom, pulled out a gun and shot up the school. So this is one of the first trials ever where the parents are being held accountable to some extent because they bought him a new gun like a couple days before. They basically seemed, obviously, I don't know, but what's coming out seems like they basically neglected him and would rather go out and party all the time. And he was suffering mentally. And they were just like, here's a gun. There are many guns in this house. Here, have access to them.
Yeah.
So some things that came out recently is that Jennifer, the mom, she was having an affair with Brian Maloki, I will guess his name is. I posted an article about it, but just some highlights that I thought were a big yikes. One thing, what do you call a male mistress? A mister?
Do you know what? This is actually funny. Someone sent a message, I meant to tell you about it, on the Instagram today after you had posted about this, and they called it a manstress. I'm like,
ah, I've never,
and they're like, there needs to be a term for it. So I thought that was funny.
Because when I made the story, I was going to, if it was flipped, I would have just been like, this is the mistress. But I didn't know, so I just wrote like the one she was having an affair with.
It says, if a woman is called a mistress, what is the man called? A philanderer.
A philanderer?
Yeah. I like manstress better.
Yeah. So after Ethan, the son, was arrested, apparently Jennifer, the mom, texted or talked to the manstress and said that she feels like she's failed miserably as a parent. And he told her, you didn't do this. They also said, be careful of anything you type on Messenger. He said to her, be careful of anything you type on Messenger. The FBI is involved. They can access anything and everything. Another thing, just quickly, where is it? So another big yikes to me especially was that they said after the school meeting they couldn't take Ethan home because both the parents had to go to work. But the male mistress, he testified that Jennifer had told him that day that she could sneak off from work that morning to meet him and hook up. And that was normally what they did. They would meet at the parking lot across from her job in the mornings and hook up there, I guess. So that looks really shitty on her part because she couldn't bring her kid home from work, but she could go have her affair from work. Another thing, they had the her boss there named Andrew Smith, and he opposed what she was saying about how she couldn't take Ethan because of work. He said that she would have been allowed to leave work for the day if she needed to care for her son, or that she would have even been able to bring Ethan to work with her if that needed to be done. Another thing that I thought was interesting, it says that this was the boss that was talking. He said later that day he saw Jennifer racing down the hall of the workplace screaming about the active shooter at her son's school. And then she left work and was texting her boss saying, "The gun is gone and so are the bullets." And the boss was surprised that she would be texting him this. And she also texted him then after that, "I need my job. Please don't judge me for what my son did." Which is like, that's what you're thinking of right now?
I know. I feel like that's the least he worries right now.
Yeah. And I know there was text on Ethan's phone. I remember us talking about it, of both the parents texting him being like, "Don't do this. Don't do this. Like, please stop." Like, they knew it was him immediately. But yeah, that's it. It seems like there is some interesting stuff coming out. I'm going to try to keep an eye on the trial as it goes. So I'll continue to post about it on Instagram. The defense, I thought this was kind of a silly quote from the defense, but I mean, I guess it's true technically. But she said, the defense attorney said, "She had an affair. Lots of people have affairs. I mean, that's the bottom line. At the end of the day, it doesn't mean, you know, your kid's a school shooter." Like, okay.
Is the dad, when is the dad going to trial? Like, I looked it up and it says January 2024 as well, but then
I feel like this article said March.
Oh, okay. So maybe hers will
he's coming up. I don't remember if this was out. I remember talking about it, but more stuff has come out. On the day of the shooting, four different employees had reported alarming behavior from Ethan Crumbly. Just like how he was like looking at the bullets and stuff. Remember that? And doing things like that. So it seems like stuff's coming out, but I'll be interested to see how this goes. I really don't know. I think she should be held, that the parents should be held accountable to some extent.
Absolutely. I agree.
Oh, another funny thing was, not funny, but just like delusional on her part, was remember they like went on the run and the attorney was like, "No."
I forgot that. Now I found it like an art studio or something.
Yeah. And the attorney was like, "No, they're not on the run. They're just getting away from the public."
They're just trying to get themselves ready to turn themselves in or whatever they were saying.
But she texted her boss and said, "We're on the run again. Helicopters. Not sure where to. I'll message you." Like, imagine just messaging your boss this stuff. So I don't know. I think she needs to be held accountable to some extent, but we'll see.
We do have an episode on Ethan Crumbly. It's a little bit older now, but once this episode comes out, I'll link it in our stories as well. So if you want to listen, if you're new to the podcast and you haven't listened, you can check out that one too. It's it is sad. Like, it's a sad story. His parents failed him. Obviously, he needs to take also responsibility for what he did, but he had a really shitty life.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure with stuff like that. Like him, Adam Lanza and Nicholas Cruz, I think their upbringings had a lot to do with this and kind of a lot of the neglect that they went through. Not saying that's an excuse for this, obviously, but I think it shows how horribly neglects can affect kids and teens growing up. I don't know. My niche interest is kind of school shootings because they're so scary. Like I said, I'll keep up with Instagram updates on that. So check us out there if you want to follow along. Okay, so today's episode, we are going to be talking about the deaths of two different women, but they seem like they are connected in a sense because it's involving the same man who is the fire captain in St. Louis, Missouri. His name is Robert Dowse, and he is the fire captain in St. Louis, Missouri. So obviously he might have some connections locally there. And both of these women died in his home. One in 2020 and one in 2024. So the most recent one, Sarah Sweeney, the 2024 one, there's not as much known about what happened to her yet, but
people are asking questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Grace Holland, she died in 2020 and what is not officially deemed, but it's made to look like it's a suicide, could be a suicide, but that's kind of the question is, was it a suicide or was this man Robert involved? Because Robert was an abusive prick. just some of the texts that we have are really mean.
911, location of your emergency.
A 911 call from a house in Creve Coeur in July 2020.
My fiance just shot herself.
Your fiance just shot herself?
Yeah.
A nightmare for the family of Grace Holland.
Yeah, it's hard to live in a world without her.
Back in 2021, First Alert 4 investigates exposed questions about Grace's death. She had died from a single gunshot wound to the head. Creve Coeur police had ruled her death a suicide, but Grace's family was and still is concerned by how the investigation was handled. In part, they say, because Grace's fiance is a captain in a neighboring fire department.
I'm a captain with the fire district.
Now, Saturday, another death inside that same person's home, this time on Conway in Frontenac. Police telling First Alert 4 investigates that they were called at around 6:45 in the morning and found a 39-year-old female deceased inside. They've classified it as a sudden death only. According to officials, there were no obvious signs of injury or struggle. The medical examiner's office says they will need toxicology results and other investigation to determine cause of death. Grace's family learned about it shortly afterwards, raising many more questions for them. An attorney for Grace Holland's family sending First Alert 4 a statement saying, quote, "We are saddened to learn of another death, especially of such a young person. We hope that the Frontenac police do what the Creve Coeur police and the county medical examiner didn't do in the past and fully investigate this tragedy."
Sweeney was identified today by police. She worked in podiatry in town. I spoke with some of her family members who say they were not aware of any life-threatening medical condition or any immediate reason for her sudden death. But they also say they had not spoken to her in 2 years, even though they say they had tried to raise their concerns about Grace's death. One of their last text messages to Sarah, they say, was to tell her to get away from that firefighter. We have attempted to reach him and an attorney who previously represented him, and we have not yet heard back. A lot of moving parts here.
We'll get into it, and we'll start some background into Grace. She is the one who passed away in 2020. In 2020, Grace Holland, she was 35 years old. She had four daughters from a previous marriage at the time of her death, and after the breakdown of her relationship where she had the children, she met Robert, the Maryland Heights fire captain. It seems like they met around 4 years prior to Grace's death, so sometime around 2016, and they got engaged in 2018. Grace was impressed as he drove a Porsche and was well-liked and well-known in their local community. Robert had a son of his own from a prior relationship. He comes from a family of first responders, his father, Robert Sr., also being the previous fire captain. His family also owns Liberty Artworks, which is a company that makes memorials for first responders. So it seems like a very locally enmeshed family.
I've seen a lot of people ask about how Robert got his money. Like we said, he's got the Porsche, you know, and I've read some comments that the Liberty Artworks is quite a successful business. Obviously, we can't verify that, but like that is a question I've seen people ask. But apparently, both Roberts are very heavily involved with the Liberty Artworks business.
And I think some fire captains make pretty decent money.
Yeah. Before we get on with the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Dipsy. Do you ever find yourself craving to get away from the routine of daily life? I know that I've spoken in the past before about our book club. Some of the books we pick are very, you know, fantasy, very escapist. I actually shared Dipsy with my book club and everyone is loving it. We love indulging in a steamy fantasy world filled with hundreds of sexy story choices on Dipsy, designed to turn you on whatever your fantasy is. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups.
And there's a growing library of fantasy series with vampires, Greek gods, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. There's also soothing sleep stories, wellness sessions, and sexy written stories to read. Let Dipsy be your go-to place to spice up your me time, explore your fantasies, relax, and unwind, or even heat things up with a partner. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/TCS. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to D-I-P-S-E-A dipsystories.com/TCS, dipsystories.com/TCS. Grace's family have said that the relationship between her and Robert was abusive. Grace was pressured to work for Rob's family's company so that he could control her income. She was never added to the payroll and she was paid under the table, so there's not even a good way to track her pay. They bought a house together, but because Rob controlled all the money, Grace was left off of the deed. And they picked out a new house together that they were going to be moving into. The new house would be on Conway Road. And their current house that they were living at was on a Fairway Circle, and that's where they had lived for the majority of their relationship.
The two houses we'll mention later, so that's why we've mentioned the address of them. The address is all online, but
yeah,
the incident, like, there's a weird when this all happens, it happens in between the two houses, so that's why we've left the addresses in there. It doesn't really matter otherwise.
Yeah. On June 9th, 2020, Grace recorded a video of an argument between her and Rob. I'll put in a clip of it.
Now, do I have to plan on you being here again tonight?
No.
Oh, but you said that last night. So if not, I'll make other arrangements.
What do you mean?
Well, I won't be here then.
Why not?
Because I don't want to be around you tonight.
Why not?
I don't want to be around you, period. But if this is going to be some sort of forced fucking marriage, that doesn't mean I can strive to spend as little time with you as possible and take every little advantage to stay the fucking arm's length from you. Every little night I have to squeak an extra hour at Liberty, traffic, flat tire, wherever the fuck I can do to just extend my life away from you is gonna be my priority.
I love you. I hope you have a good day, okay?
There won't be any trips. Okay. I don't want to travel with you. Okay. I don't want to see the world with you. I love
you.
I don't do anything with you.
I love you. I hope you have a good day. Okay?
Fuck yourself.
Okay?
Fuck you.
I hope you get in a better mood.
No, this is the mood I'm going
to
be in.
Nope, you're just trying to be mean to me, and I'm not going to take it. Okay. I love you. Have a good day.
Fuck you. Fuck your cunt mother. Get the fuck out of my house.
Love you. Have a good day.
Then we will be selling Conway. Just so you know, so I would work on something, whether it's keeping the kids at Irondale or whatever it is you need to do. So, yeah.
So that same month, Grace reported that Rob pushed, shoved, and dragged her down the hallway. He also pulled her clothes off. Grace had bruises on her arms, thighs, and spine after this incident, and she photographed her injuries. At one point, Grace contacted the Maryland Heights Fire Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Mark Russell, and raised concerns about Robert's behavior because he was blowing up at home, and nothing ever came of this concern, as Mark is one of Rob's good friends. So if anything, I probably just pissed off Rob even more.
Yeah.
Because Mark probably told him. So things seemed to really escalate in June 2020. Grace called her mother, Patricia, during an incident where Rob was yelling at her and throwing things in the yard. Patricia told Grace to call the police, and she then heard Rob saying, "My brothers in blue are not going to do anything to me. I've already taken care of that. You're the crazy girlfriend, remember?"
What a jerk.
Yeah. So Patricia tried to get Grace to leave the house, but Grace said she couldn't do that while Robert was in such a state. Grace's children told Patricia that Robert was shoving their mom and that he was always yelling at her. Robert scared the kids by throwing a phone across the dinner table where they were sitting. They also said that he lost his temper over minor things, such as the couch touching the curtain in the living room and some silverware being out of place. Grace captured another conversation on video, and in this one, Rob went on a rant about being in a, quote, forced fucking marriage, and said that he would do anything to spend as little time as possible with her. Grace responded calmly by telling Rob that she loved him. Rob responded with, "Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck your cunt mother, get the fuck out of my house." Rob reportedly offered Grace $600 via text to abort a pregnancy. On July 16th, 2020, Grace texted him, "I love you, please be safe." And Rob replied with, "I do not want to get married. I told you this over and over. All you do is keep pushing, move on with your life. This is over." He wrote again a few minutes later, "Get out of my house. I don't want to be married. I don't want a baby. I don't want to live with you, girl, with your girls." Oh. Okay. Grace responded with, "I love you. Have a good first day back. Please be safe." And Rob responded, "Fuck off." I don't know if we did we say she's pregnant at this point?
Yeah, yeah, because he's talking, it's kind of like, I got a lot of this information from the court document, so it doesn't actually have a date of, because I believe that after this, at some point, she suffered a miscarriage. Right. But it's a very short timeline in between this and when she passes away. So I think she was pregnant still at this stage. She did have a miscarriage at some point around this time. I'm not entirely sure of the date though, but yeah. So she was pregnant or had, you know, had just been pregnant.
Yeah. I'm also interested I don't want to sound victim blamey. I'm not trying to, before anyone gets upset. Just very interesting to me how he's saying these things and she just kind of totally disregards it and says, I love you.
Yeah. Like, maybe she just knew that he would act like this occasionally and be irrational and he'd be fine. So that's why she just kind of didn't engage in the situation.
Yeah. And I know, as we've said in other episodes, abusers are very manipulative and they know the type of people to pick who are maybe more passive or more afraid and won't stand up for themselves. So I do understand that. So at some point after this, according to articles, it appears that Grace suffered a miscarriage, like we just mentioned. The timeline's a little blurry, but basically it seems like she was pregnant, wanting to get married. He was mad, didn't want to have a baby, didn't want to get married. She has a miscarriage, and then they try to blame this potential suicide on her having a miscarriage.
And that one reason too why I am assuming she did have the miscarriage, because this all happened, you know, a few days before she died, where he was like, I don't want the baby. But then in the autopsy, as far as I've seen, there's no mention of her being pregnant. So I assume it happened at some point around that. If anyone has any clarification, let me know, because I looked and looked and couldn't find any.
So the following day, on July 17th, 2020, Rob texted Grace as if the previous day's conversations had not happened. So this kind of goes with what you were saying of, like, maybe he just had these crazy outbursts, but then he'd be like, anyways, like, everyone would just kind of move on from it. So he asked if Grace wanted to meet up with some friends, and they then had a discussion about their home. So despite the conversation being seemingly mundane, Rob ended it with, I absolutely cannot be with you. I'm not marrying you. You and your fucking kids, fuck you. I'm interested to learn more about him and why he does this. Like, how are you just going to be texting about maybe like the house, talking about like, oh, what cabinets are we going to get? And then be like, fuck you, you piece of shit.
I feel like they were actually discussing like taps or faucets for the home, is what I've read. So,
oh, yeah.
Literally just in my discussion about, you know, what color should we get? And then fuck you, and I don't want to marry you.
Yeah, he seems mentally unwell. So this continued on for days. On July 19th, 2020, Rob texted Grace, I've asked you to leave several times. I don't want you there. I don't want you or your kids. I want away. I've asked you to leave. Take your Jeep, your things, and leave. I'm done. But also remember, they're buying a new house together, apparently, or he is, that she's allowed to live in, because he won't put her on the deed. But despite all this, later that day, they had a discussion about faucets they wanted to buy for their future home.
So it's just so up and down, back and forth, like anger, rage, and then, oh yeah, what do you want? What curtains do you want to buy? It's just, yeah, a game. He was playing a game.
So on July 20th, 2020, I also wonder, because this was during COVID too, how are they just going out and buying faucets?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
But that was also a tough time for a lot of people. So on July 20th, 2020, Robert went nuts again. He wrote, I want you out of my life. You did nothing but ruin my first night staying at Conway. It's the new house. The thought of you sleeping in that house makes me want to vomit. That's how much I hate you. Unhinged things to say.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the next day, July 21st, 2020, around 10 p.m., Grace took selfies of her and Robert in bed at the new house, and Grace was smiling in the photos. But it's like the day before, he was texting about how the thought of you sleeping in that bed makes him want to vomit. And so what happened after that's unclear. But 7 hours later, Grace was dead at their previous home, the Fairways home. So somehow they left that house.
After being in bed at 10 o'clock at night.
10 p.m.
Yeah.
Went back to the other house, and she died. Robert has apparently never given an explanation about anything that happened that night. Grace died from a gunshot wound to her left temple. The shooting happened around 5 a.m. on July 22nd, 2020. Police officers arrived on the scene. A few minutes later, detectives arrived on the scene around 7 a.m. So I'll put in the 911 call here.
911, location of your emergency.
2-3 Fairway Circle.
2-3 Fairway Circle?
Yes, ma'am.
What's going on?
My fiancée just shot herself.
Shot? Your fiance just shot herself?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a mortal wound.
Okay.
I'm a captain with the fire district with Maryland Heights.
Okay, let me connect you over to Central County, okay? Hang on 1 second. Sir, are you out in St. Charles, or is that where she's at?
No, Creekport. Creekport.
Okay.
What's the location of your emergency?
This is West Central with a transfer. He's at 23 Fairway.
623 Fairway Circle.
Oh, I'm sorry,
623 Fairway Circle. Okay, is that a house or an apartment?
It's a house.
Okay, what's the emergency there?
My fiance shot herself.
She shot herself?
Yeah. She shot herself in the head. It's a mortal injury. I'm Captain with Maryland Heights.
Okay, sir. I'm sorry. So she is beyond.
Yes, that's correct. I just knew.
So at 7:25 a.m., so 25 minutes after the detectives arrived on the scene, a detective contacted the medical examiner and reported, Grace came into the living room to give Robert a hug, and she went back into the bedroom without speaking to him. Shortly after, Robert heard a single gunshot and located Grace in the bedroom with a gun and apparently blood beneath her head. So that was what he said about it at the time.
It's interesting to me, too, just to interrupt for a minute. So I've put that bit that you just read is an excerpt from a report. So in that report, they call him Robert, but they call her Holland, which is her last name. So it's kind of interesting that
shows their friends, maybe.
Yeah, they address, they know him, but they call her by her last name. So an interesting, piece of info that I picked up.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. So later that same day, Rob went to the police department with a lawyer. The statement he gave then was entirely different to what the detective had told the medical examiner. So this says, Rob stated he got up for work and was standing at his closet stacking clothing in his arms. Sorry, it's kind of small to read if I sound like I'm struggling. Rob stated Grace left the bedroom and returned. Rob stated Grace approached him and hugged him. Rob stated he attempted to hug Grace, but his arms were full. Rob stated he told Grace that he needed to leave for work. Rob stated Grace moved to his right side and hugged him by pulling his face toward hers. Rob stated Grace said goodbye, at which time he heard a gunshot. Rob stated Grace fell to the ground and he saw a gun and blood coming from her head. It's interesting he said he heard a gunshot was because he's trying to say she pulled his head in to hug him. Like maybe his head was on her shoulder and then she shot herself.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's interesting.
Rob's original interview tape ended up somehow being destroyed by the police, of course. What a coincidence. So this is a statement that was given about that incident. It says the original interview tape recorded when he worked on his written statement has inadvertently been destroyed by the Creve Coeur Police Department in violation of Missouri state statutes. Grace's sister, Laura, found out about her sister's death via Facebook, which is crazy. Someone sent her a message on July 22nd, 2020, saying, is it true your sister is dead? Also, imagine just messaging someone that.
Oh, no.
Let's have some kindness, people.
And the thing is, it was this person was a teacher at Grace's children's school. I feel like that is very unprofessional.
Yeah, just have some common sense. Jesus. That message, like you were just saying, was from a teacher at Laura's niece's school. The teacher had heard the news of a parent's death from one of the school resource officers. So it seems like someone should get in trouble for that.
Before we get on with the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, ExpressVPN. I've just heard something really mind-blowing today. Do you know that when you search for something on Netflix, you only get a fraction of what they actually have? Netflix actually has more than 18,000 titles available globally, but only 6,000 of those available in the US. And imagine how little amount of them I'm getting here in Australia. I feel like I always have such issues. I'm like, I can't find it. Where is it? And it's just because we're missing out on thousands of great shows unless you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think that you're located. They have over 100 different locations, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows no matter where you live, even in Australia like me.
I've used ExpressVPN a few times. I used it to watch the Harry Potter movies because they aren't on Netflix here anymore, but they are on Netflix UK. So if you're ever just craving to watch a random show, you could see where it's available and use your VPN to have access to it where normally you wouldn't. I also know tons of people use it to watch Love Island, all the different versions of it, because even though it'll be on streaming eventually, you can't watch it live, and it's a very important show to watch live. So I know a lot of people use it for Love Island. It's great because it's super fast. You could stream everything in HD with no buffering. It works on any device. You can watch them with your phone, laptop, tablet. It also encrypts your data for privacy, protection, security, so it keeps you safe from hackers. So you're always safe when you're using a VPN.
So stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you guys 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/TCS. That's expressvpn.com/TCS to get 3 extra months completely free.
Laura, her sister, her twin sister actually, right?
Yeah.
Said, I was in shock. She called her other sister who works in drug rehabilitation and who put her on the phone with a crisis counselor. She called her parents and heard men's muffled voices in the background, and she knew that they had just been told the news. Laura remembers hearing her mother's voice on the phone begging her over and over, don't drive anywhere. I guess because she didn't want her to drive while she was upset.
Yeah.
At Grace's funeral, she had no friends show up. Her sister commented on that and said, how many adult friends showed up at her funeral? Zero. She was no longer allowed to have friendships. We've talked about that before, how abusers tend to isolate their victims from their friends and family so they don't have anyone that can help them or that they feel they can talk to. A lot of Grace's friends had cut ties with her based on Robert's behavior. Grace's family have said that Rob never reached out to them or asked to be part of the funeral process. He totally cut ties with Grace's children as well. I'm sure the kids were like, thank God.
It would be confusing for them, I guess, to have grown up with this. Like, it seems like they were together for, you know, between 2 and 4 years. So like that would have been a large part of those kids' life. But I guess in the end, it was absolutely the best thing.
Yeah. So police, it's interesting. They say like they ruled her death a suicide, but then later on, they're like, maybe not. Police ended up ruling Grace's death a suicide. In 2021, police interviewed Rob about Grace's missing engagement ring. The ring was worth $20,000 and had gone missing after her death. Grace was seen wearing the ring in crime scene photos, but Rob said that was a fake ring made for traveling. Rob told police that Grace had given the real ring back to him. Text messages were found, though, that indicate Rob eventually gave the ring back to Grace. So where is it? Rob eventually claimed that the ring was lost and he filed an insurance claim, but he was never able to provide any documentation to prove that there was a fake ring or that he did file an insurance claim. So it seems like he probably just kept it and pawned it, would be my guess, or sold it.
So Grace's sister Laura has written an open letter to the police department outlining 20 points of failure in the case. She said, the police have failed us at every level since Grace's death, and their failure to collect evidence means we will likely never get answers. So these are some excerpts from the letter. She said, number one, the police failed to correctly identify an entry versus exit wound, which also means these wounds do not correlate with the position of the body. Number two, they misinformed the medical examiner's office as to the location and position of Robert at the moment of the time of her death. He was by his own admission, standing next to her. Three, they failed to call crimes against persons. Four, they failed to remove friends of Robert's from the police investigation. Five, they closed the crime scene before reaching out to the family. Six, they failed to investigate her stolen property and lied about not investigating it, which I assume is the ring. Seven, they allowed Robert to be present when picking up her property despite saying otherwise to the family. Eight, they failed to collect and bag evidence such as bagging her hands, testing Robert's hands for residue and collecting his clothing. Number nine, they failed to address the large pool of blood on the right side of her head and identify the cause of that injury. 10, they failed to address the bruises on her body shown in the autopsy photos. 11, they managed to, quote, lose multiple video recordings. 12, personal police cell phones were used and not recorded. One officer refused to supply his phone records as part of a law request. Number 13, they failed to collect Robert's phones, stating that he needed them for work. which is wild. 14, I'm assuming this is Laura, because she says, I was told by a police detective that if I wanted answers, I needed to hire a lawyer. 15, they extended professional courtesy to Robert well beyond what any other citizen would be given. 16, they failed to verify her handwriting in a suicide note written with language outside her recursive writing patterns. I've never ever seen the suicide note or have heard anything about what it contains, but it seems like there was some type of note left at the scene. 17, they failed to question Robert at the time and have yet to question him 14 months later. 18, they failed to contact her therapist. 19, detectives took almost 2 hours to arrive at the crime scene. I've also read a recent article that alleges that the gun that Grace used allegedly to take her life was never tested. This is an excerpt from the article. It says, no gunshot residue tests were completed on Robert on the day of Holland's death, and no one tested her gun for DNA. Police Chief Hartman countered that gunshot residue tests are inaccurate and that a DNA test would not be helpful as Robert had access to Grace's gun.
So that list talked about kind of how Rob got some favorable treatment, it seemed, and like his phone records were never really looked into. His phone was never taken. There is a phone call that is out between Rob and one of the police detectives where, I don't know, I just feel like if they didn't kind of maybe know each other, like if he wasn't a fireman or the chief and all for the same area, it wouldn't be this friendly. And some of them is just kind of talking shit about the family in a way. Mm. So I'll put in some clips from that call here. I won't put in the whole thing. Obviously, it's like 10 minutes, but we'll link it in the blog and all that if you want to hear the whole thing. Apparently, there's a Facebook group that's run by the family.
Yeah, I'm actually in that group as well, which is interesting.
And they put a lot of that stuff in there.
Yeah. I'll be starting back next cycle.
Okay. What they want us to do is come by and look at your phone. Do you still have a text thread between you and Grace?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
What they're asking is that we come by, take a look at that, and take some pictures of it. We've got her phone, but it's a little bit difficult and expensive to download. If it would be all right, okay. We'll come by and snap some pictures of the thread between you and her, and then that's pretty much it.
Well, it goes back quite a ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I guess, are you guys looking for something immediate, or?
Let me.
Where are we driving at? I guess we're trying to, I guess, where are they driving at with the...
It's going to have to be sort of relevant to, recent events, so...
Like, what, are arguing about having a baby or not
that,
having a baby?
That would be, certainly relevant to show her mindset and what was, what was going on in her mind.
Pretty much, yeah, well, she didn't... I can tell you, she didn't, threaten... Well... I don't know. If you went back far enough, there was times where she would, say things like, hey, mm-hmm. I'm going to go be with our baby. And,
right.
So that's
well, that's the kind of stuff that shows that.
You'd have to go back, you'd have to go back, quite a bit,
yeah. I don't know, how
I
many.
Is the family pushing on this, or is this relative?
It's everything. It is part of that. It's part of us just wanting to document this or that, and it's, again, it also can protect you. If there's that, I'm going to go be with my baby, type language. That obviously is in and of itself is, to be honest, it's suicidal. So. That's the type of thing that would show that, this is something that she did all on her own. And of course, the family has different views and is angry and whatever, so.
Well, do you think that like I shot her?
Well,
obviously I didn't.
No.
At
this point, no. But, that was something that came up initially.
Right.
And that's why we want to do a very thorough job. And, again, it's to preserve the truth, and it's protection for, you know, I mean, I can't see your phone, so I don't know what's on it. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's us arguing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
and every couple does back and forth about, right?
You know, arguing about, you know, getting married,
mm-hmm.
argued about moving in together or not moving in together. Like
right.
I said, I've been pretty open about this. I was
mm-hmm.
1 foot in and 1 foot out of this relationship, so
yep.
it's a lot of arguing back and forth about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess I just.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah, I mean, I can coordinate a time to kind of do it. I guess I'm just trying to figure out how far, you know.
So despite this happening in 2020, Grace's death has received a lot of media attention recently for reasons we'll get into in a second. But just the other day, like a few days ago, on January 31st, 2024, it was announced that Grace's death was still being investigated by St. Louis police and that they considered her death suspicious. This is a statement from Sergeant Tracy Panis, who is from the St. Louis County Police. So Tracy said, at this point, the case is still classified as a suspicious death and remains active. It will be incumbent upon the prosecutor's office to decide if any further action is required or if any criminal charges will be filed. So that is kind of it in terms of chronological for Grace's case. We will now move on to the case of the second woman involved, is Sarah Sweeney. Sarah Sweeney was born in Huntington, West Virginia on November 2nd, 1984 to Stephen and Teresa Sweeney. She was diagnosed with Peirce's disease when she was 6 years old. I actually hadn't heard about this, so I looked it up. It says, Peirce's disease is an uncommon condition that affects children between the ages of 3 and 11. Blood supply to the head of the thigh bone is disrupted, which can cause the bone to deteriorate. This can cause pain, limping, and limited movement of the hip joint. So Sarah was very successful. She graduated from East Forsyth High School in 2003, and she went on to attend North Carolina State University. She graduated from there in 2007 with degrees in microbiology and biological science, and she received a minor in biochemistry. Sarah then attended Barry University School of Podiatric Medicine and Surgery in Miami Shores, Florida. She got her Doctor of Podiatric Medicine in 2012, and she completed her surgical residency at hospitals in Miami. She then lived in Texas for a while before she moved to St. Louis, where she opened up her own practice. Sarah's family have said that she was vibrant and outgoing. They also said that she loved animals, was an excellent pianist and a talented artist. She loved purses, fashion, and jewelry. At some point, Sarah was also diagnosed with mast cell activation syndrome. This is about that illness. It says people with the mast cell activation syndrome experience repeated episodes of symptoms due to release of mast cell mediators. Symptoms are variable and can include hives, wheeze, gastrointestinal upset, low blood pressure, and anaphylaxis. High levels of mast cell mediators are released during these episodes. So Sarah did have some medical issues that were known. Everyone knew about them. And at times they were quite serious. I believe I read that in 2021 she had been intubated for a while. So she was unwell over the years. Sarah met Robert shortly after she moved to St. Louis. They became engaged. I can't really find a timeline for their relationship, but it happened soon after Grace died because I know that by 2021, Sarah had fallen out with her family about Robert. So Grace died in 2020. By the next year, he was engaged to Sarah and she had already fallen out with her family. So it's all happened very quickly.
Yeah, that seems like a red flag to me, essentially.
Sarah's family eventually found out about what happened to Grace. I guess they connected the dots that she had been with Robert, and they sent Sarah news articles and information. And by November 2021, that's when Sarah had stopped talking to them. She wouldn't answer messages from her mother and her stepfather. Her mother, Teresa, said she was a grown adult, a doctor, and a woman. We didn't know what to do. So at 6:39 a.m. on January 13th, 2024, so like 2 weeks ago, Sarah was found dead at the Conway home owned by Robert. This was the home that he had bought with Grace. There were no apparent signs of trauma on the body, according to the police. An attorney for Grace's family spoke to First Alert 4, and they said, "We are saddened to learn of another death, especially of such a young person. We hope that the Frontenac police do what the Creve Coeur police and County Medical Examiner didn't do in the past and fully investigate this tragedy." Sarah's attorney spoke to the media, and this is kind of interesting to me because why is the attorney speaking to the media after her death about her illnesses? But
and her attorney's making
it. Yeah. So her attorney spoke to the media and said, quote, that she absolutely had a life-threatening condition, and that attorney did confirm that she had been hospitalized and intubated in 2021. But I feel like this is just a weird statement for the attorney to make, especially when the death investigation isn't finished yet.
Yeah.
After this statement, though, articles have been released stating that Sarah was fearful of Robert. There are federal court filings that I've read online, and it has revealed that Sarah has said that she was lived in fear of Robert, and she described him as suspected of murdering a previous girlfriend. There's a text that Sarah sent to a friend, and it's been released. I'm going to read it out because it's interesting, but the text was released as part of a court filing from a lawsuit that Sarah brought against some former employers. Basically, this went back and forth. She was suing them for gender discrimination and sexual harassment, and basically the lawyers for their company wanted to subpoena Robert and some of Sarah's friends and colleagues. Sarah's attorneys pushed back, but they did release several exhibits from the court case, and this is one of them. So it says, all I ask is that you do the right thing in your heart. I'm devastated to know that the one person who I knew and I could count on would be there for me. Sherry has seen all our texts and how you and I were scared and promised to stick up for each other. So I'm assuming this is going on about the work situation. It says, how you didn't want me to quit and leave me alone working there. I'm hurt. I'm not mad. I didn't think someone would literally agree with a person being investigated by the Attorney General for fraud, could lose his license, and he's not respected in St. Louis. So it goes on a little bit and it says, I've been homeless. I've had to move in with my boyfriend, the quote, murderer, which has been scary at times. I've lost every penny, closed out my savings account. I've had issues getting a job because of my past affiliation with him. I've suffered medical stuff because of no health insurance. I've lost wages when I've worked hard. And then it goes on and on to basically, she talks about how this lawsuit and the harassment that she had endured is apparently, well, at the time was affecting her life, but she does refer to Rob in that text as the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
So that is kind of it up to date with Grace and Sarah's story. Sarah's story is obviously still going to have updates. They haven't released her cause of death yet. I'm assuming they're waiting for an autopsy. It's just being classed as sudden, but it's very interesting that within a few years, two women have died in the home of a man who was known to be abusive.
And just to be clear, because I've noticed also while I was reading today, a lot of news stations and stuff won't even say his name and like blur out his face in pictures. So just to be clear, we're not saying he killed them or anything. We're just talking about what happened. We're not accusing him of killing them. We're just talking about it.
We should be clear. He hasn't been arrested or charged in connection with either case. But what is clear is that after Sarah died, they started looking into Grace's case again. They have now reclassified it as suspicious and have said that if any charges, it'll be investigated to determine if any charges should be laid.
Yeah. And the Grace's case, since there's been more time for people to talk about it and think about it, the family's put out more information. Even though I'd say most people are on her family's side of either thinking there's more to the story, but there are people who are defending Rob as well, saying like Grace had threatened suicide in the past. Grace had a gun that was like taken away from her for a while and then was given back to her. So it'd be one thing if it was just Grace where I'd be like, okay, like, yeah, maybe it was a suicide and it still could be, but that doesn't mean that he's still not like a trash piece of garbage that probably contributed to her committing suicide after just seeing those texts and all of that. And I'm sure there's much, much, much more that went on that the public doesn't even know about because, you know, like not every single one of their arguments is recorded. Yeah. Just those texts were awful. So I couldn't imagine what it was like living there as well. But then you have a second death with the same guy. Not, I can't say in the same house, but in his home. So now it's a little bit more like, strange.
And it sounds interesting too. Like, obviously we don't really know much about the dynamics between Sarah and her family, but for her to stop speaking to them after they sent messages about possible things that had happened in the past, it's interesting.
It seems like the same pattern.
Police Chief Jeff Hartman, who looked into Grace's death, has made a statement about Sarah's death. He said, if the investigation rules Sarah died as a result of homicide, her death should be fully investigated as such, and I pray the person responsible is held accountable. He also said, I would expect increased scrutiny on the Creve Kerr case as a result, which is Grace's case. However, we have not received the ruling on that cause of death for Sarah yet.
Yeah, so I'm sure more will come out if there's like an update. By the time this episode comes out, I'll put in a clip here on anything about that. But as of right now, we don't know as much about Sarah. We don't have a cause of death or anything for her yet. but I guess we shall see.
It could very well end up being just a coincidence. Like, I'm even if something, even if Grace's death wasn't a suicide, it is still possible, I guess, that Sarah died from whatever medical conditions that she was suffering from. She was unwell. There was a history of that. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes out after the autopsy and I guess toxicology reports.
Yeah, so it's hard to comment too much on it without us risking like maybe getting in trouble or anything like that. Not that I think we're big enough to really get in trouble, but you never know. But yeah, I guess we'll see. I do think it, like, what are the chances?
Yeah.
It's a little suspicious.
And even I know Grace's family, one of their main arguments is that Grace was shot, I believe, in the left temple, but she was right-handed. So essentially, you know, that would be a very awkward way to shoot yourself. Like, why would you bother? Just do it in the closest temple, essentially.
Yeah, and it just, there's just like a lot of weird things. And I know, like, from other stories leading up to suicide, not everything always makes sense. Like, how I'm always like, why did, I mean, not that we know what happened to Alan White, but that one always stands out to me. Of me being like, why did he go get gas before? Because one big theory was that he killed himself. I'm like, why would he go to the gym and get gas and then just go and kill himself? And there's always things where the family was like, no, like, they were so happy. They were just doing this. They were talking about these projects. They were doing all these things. And then they just went and killed themselves. Like, that doesn't make sense. But still, it's weird to me how, like we were saying, they were in bed at 10 o'clock in the one house taking pictures. And then by 5 a.m., they're already back at the other house. And like, I guess maybe he said he was getting ready for work. So they woke up super early for him to go to work and both went back to the house, other house.
I wonder if there was some argument. Yeah, maybe. Or if there was an argument and she went back and then he went back in the morning. I don't know. Like, there could be, I guess, a lot of reasons for it. But yeah, a very, and I just wish that we knew more about that timeline after the 10 p.m.
Yeah, it seems like it wasn't really looked into that well, and I guess it could be because of the local connections.
Especially for the detectives, after half an hour of arriving on the scene to send a statement. Like, I feel like that is absolutely not long enough to do a thorough investigation, a thorough impartial investigation anyway.
Yeah, it just feels like there should be more information known anyways. But regardless, like I said, we don't know if he is involved in the deaths or anything like that, but I can say with confidence he was an abusive piece of trash. So
and that's proven, like, by the text messages. Obviously, a lot of this comes from the court documents, which are from Grace's family, so there may have been other things going on in their relationship that we don't know about, but there is proof of these abusive messages at the very least.
Yeah. So that is it for this episode. As I said, if there's any updates, I'll have put in a clip, or we'll post on Instagram. So make sure you're following us on Instagram at True Crime Society. We also have the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. You could read this in written form and look at any of the texts and documents and all that there as well. If you want to follow our personal Instagram accounts, mine is StephSum_Olivia is TCS Olivia, to check out what we're doing. And you can find us on Patreon if you want ad-free episodes. We do weekly bonus episodes. We've been talking about the Kansas City deaths a lot on there just because it's not really enough for a full episode, but a lot of people have been following that. Maybe by now that this episode comes out, there'll be more answers, it seems like, the way things are going. But you can check us out on Patreon for all that. There's a link in the episode description, usually. And that is it, really. Leave us nice reviews, share the podcast, all those things. Big help to us. And that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. Peace out. Stay safe.
See ya.